gentlemen and disappointments. We are coming to you live from the Woman Caves in New York and Connecticut. My name is Leslie.
And my name is Melissa.
And we are Verbally Disastrous. This podcast is copyrighted through the U.S. Copyright Office as well as the Writers Guild of America. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Part B, Episode 42, Working on the Railroad with the Tools as a Chick. If for some reason you missed Part A, head back into the podcast platform of your choice and look for Part A to catch the beginning of the conversation. So now, let's check out Part B and the last half of the discussion where I share about my work legacy while working on the railroad with my tools. Come on, let's take a listen. As a mother of an electrician apprentice, I would freak the fuck out if my son did not follow safety measures and don the flash suit. Truth be told, I would have far more expectations of him than I do of myself, but that has changed as I'm older and have more safety experience. One of the first things I bought him was a lockout-tagout kit. A lockout-tagout kit is a safety system that is designed to shut down a power source and identify the name and contact of the person who is working on the de-energized power supply. It has been said that there is no reason to have to work on live equipment ever. I would be an absolute liar if I told you that I have always de-energized equipment that I was working on in my career. Because of the apparent job hazards, I was extremely nervous about the idea of him following me into the business, rightfully so. My biggest fear is getting a call that he got hung up on some live voltage. It is a fear that I have the longer he's in the business. However, he absolutely loves the business, and wild horses could not drag him away and work elsewhere. Therefore, I'm stuck with his career choice. He really wants to work on a project where I'm the general foreman, project manager, or safety manager. Well, while it sounds like a good idea, I would probably micromanage the shit out of him. I would probably be harder on him than anyone else on the damn job, so he's better off with me being afar. Now, once the windows were created and the new switchgear was installed, meaning when I say a window, it is a doorway that connects between the two pieces of equipment. You have the side panels butted up together and attached with hardware. Then you have the window cut out that's exact same size so that you can pass through from one side of gear to the other with your power to make it seamless. Once the switchgear was installed and the windows were created, they were safed off around the edge to prevent the wires from being cut or nicked over time. Any form of wiring that was required was ran between the two pieces of equipment, and then the bus bars were connected. Once the wires were in place, then they were terminated in their rightful locations. You must make sure that you are properly bonded and grounded to the existing grounding system. That's very important. You have to absolutely double and triple check that there is absolutely no debris, tools, or material that is lying on any of the bus bars that are in the switchgear. The copper bus bars are flat panels where we connect the line power in order to energize the switchgear. Well, it could be line and load too. Leaving a tool on the copper bus is a very expensive mistake to be made. I would purposely check multiple times for anything left in any part of the equipment. Once we were done, I used the vacuum and cleaned any metal shavings within the equipment. Made sure it's clean, super clean, like you can eat off the bottom of the switchgear. Once finished, we had to wait for the designated time for the shutdown of the existing switchgear so that we could tap into it. There was a group of us that worked on that and prayed that there was no equipment failure. Any problems would require all of us sticking around to get the power restored. In a worst case scenario, we would have to call in an emergency generator to give the existing space temporary power until the problem could be resolved. I always felt comfortable during those shutdowns when I worked with Donnie, since he had the high voltage splicer experience. I watched the more experienced coworkers and took mental notes. Thankfully, I don't remember any major problems with any of our shutdowns that was a result of our work. Our main group was very talented, so that helps with the success of projects. Every once in a while, you get a loose cannon with two left feet in your crew that you have to keep your eyes on at all times. We have had a few coworkers who had reputations for being known as the, quote, life of the party. We had a guy known as a partier in our crew for a short period of time. For whatever reason, this fella opted to drape an extension cord over a knife switch that was on some big switchgear. We have had apprentices that were not only a nightmare to work with, but also a hazard on the job. When you have to watch another person's move, you're not focusing on your own work. On the other hand, there are even the best workers who happen to have a bad day. One good foreman that I consider a brother and a personal friend, he'll go by the name of Hank. Hank is a super hard worker who had a tremendous amount of nervous energy while at work, especially in his younger years. In his younger years, Hank was a blend of being a cross between a bull in a china shop, yet a very kind and caring man. Before meeting Hank, Harry was telling me war stories about his adventures with Hank. He told me about a time that a large electrical panel was on the wall. Hank walked up to it and ripped it off the wall like it was nothing. Apparently, he was losing patience with the hardware that was securing the panel to the wall and just decided to rip it off. Meanwhile, this takes a tremendous amount of strength to pull off that type of a feat, but that's him for sure. Hank's rough approach to tasks on the job site earned him the nickname the Gorilla. I came onto Hank's railroad platform project looking forward to witnessing the legend in action within his own habitat. I'm happy to say that he was an absolute gentleman and a professional with offering what material and tools were needed to get the job done. I actually worked with Hank when I was pregnant with my son Johnny back in 2004-2005. He always did right by me and was often trying to talk me into hanging up the tool bag while I was fighting to stay on the project as long as possible. My goal was to work as long as I possibly could and then take my time on the back end of it and stay home for a couple of months with my son. Hank and the rest of the guys were trying to look out for me, and I appreciate it. Working while pregnant on and under railroad platforms was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. The hardest part was dressing warm enough and powering through the winter season. Who would ever know that it was my turn to look out for Hank much later on in the project. Even the best people have bad days where they're not focusing as they should. All it takes is one time to find danger when you are normally on guard and quite successful at avoiding it. We all were working on the underside of various railroad platforms on the railroad line that hugs the Hudson River. This suburban railroad line hits various town stops throughout Westchester County that sits just north of New York City. One morning, my coworker and I were working under the platform along a track that was shut down so that we could work safely. Our track manager told us that we had to shut down our work area pickup and get under the platform. We had to wait until a local train came through before going back to our previous work area. My partner, Frenchie, and I were perched under the platform waiting patiently for the track manager to give us the green light to go back to work. While Frenchie and I were under the platform, Hank joined us under the platform while on his cell phone. Frenchie and I were doing our usual cracking jokes and breaking each other's chops during the downtime. Hank somewhat interrupts our joke flow with his raised voice and increased frustration. At the time, we assumed that he was talking to the office, because who else would he be talking to like that? Whoever was on the phone flustered the hell out of him. Hank folded the phone and started making his way out from the platform and onto the live track. Frenchie and I stole a quick glance at each other and screamed at Hank at the top of our lungs in unison. We both jumped into action and raced towards Hank. Frenchie yanked his left shoulder and I yanked his right shoulder perfectly. These steps were literally taken within seconds of the local train making a stop. If it was an express train, I don't think we could have saved him. The force of Frenchie and I pulling Hank back in caused us to all fall back onto the gravel. Of course, the screaming sent the track manager immediately to our area. Technically, we should not have been under the platform. We should have been up on top of the platform within sight of the track manager. If an accident would have happened, the track manager would have certainly gotten into serious trouble. It took a few seconds for Hank to register that he had just had a near-death experience. By the grace of God, we were able to get his body out of the path of the train. Now, Hank is not a small guy. I'm speculating that Hank's probably about 6'1" at least, and approximately between 220 to 240 pounds. He's a big, solid, muscular man, and the two of us yanked in unison and pulled him back in, and it was a miracle. Like, literally within seconds of that train coming in. I gave Hank only a brief moment to catch his breath before I broke his chops. I asked him if he needed to go to the outhouse and check his shorts. He offered a nervous laugh, I'll never forget that, and excused himself from under the platform. His complexion turned pale as he was just hit with the impact of what he just narrowly avoided. Later on, he shared that he called his wife, and it hit him about what almost happened. Frenchie and I did think about the potential impact as soon as Hank walked away. I shared that I would have needed major therapy if Hank's body would have disintegrated in front of me. Frenchie's eyes widened at the thought, and he agreed that this thought was intense, but could have very well been a reality. I adore the hell out of Hank, so that would have been a gruesome experience that would have laced my mind with lifelong post-traumatic stress effects. After the quote smoke cleared, we spoke with our track manager. He was deeply concerned about what happened. It would have been a disaster for our foreman, the crew, the track manager's career. It was at that moment when I reflected on the potential impact of the guy tasked with keeping us safe. It's not foolproof, and ultimately up to each member of the crew to be safe. By the time you hear a train, it is already too late to get out of the way. They come so fast, you do not have time to react. This is especially true if it is an express train that passes the station. When you have to install conduit, you have to always be mindful of where your conduit ends are at all times. If you're working on a dead track, you can never let the conduit stick out into a live track path. I have heard of a story during a required track safety class where a worker was careless with the positioning of his conduit while working near a live track. An express train came through and caught the end of the conduit. The momentum spun the conduit wildly and actually decapitated the worker. This scenario has always been a thought in my head when I was working near a live track. It's very important to be mindful at all times. That's for damn sure. I was working on a platform finishing some punch list items one afternoon when I saw a man take the biggest risk I've ever seen. I actually watched a guy jump down on the northbound platform onto the track. He then proceeded to place one foot on the rail and the other foot on the cover of the third rail. He then crossed all four live tracks to get to the southbound platform. The man had no idea that he escaped death in a few ways with what he did. You have two tracks that are northbound and two tracks that are southbound. The two inside tracks are the express tracks. A train passes on each track with a speed of at least 80 miles per hour. His foot was on the third rail and the track. If there was a crack in the third rail cover, he would have grounded himself to the track. It is 700 volts DC current that would have instantly killed him by cooking him from the inside out. Never mind not knowing the track schedule of each live track. This incident happened before cameras were a thing on the cell phone. It would have been ingrained in my mind for life had he not been successful with his foolish mission. I can't even say that this was the worst thing that I've witnessed while working alongside the railroad platforms. I used to see people who were clearly on drugs opting to use various areas of the platform as their personal toilet. I remember crossing paths with this extremely scruffy, rough, drug-laden woman near our gang boxes that held our tools and material for the project. This woman had a stumble to her walk while wearing a light-colored floral pattern dress. While the woman was mid-stride, she stopped abruptly and spread her legs in a fight stance. It was confusing for a microsecond as to what this woman was about to do. She then proceeded to squat right in front of our gang box and unloaded her bladder right onto the platform floor. The volume of her golden stream was intense and flowed like a babbling brook. It was during that moment that I actually felt rage inside my belly at what she was doing. Didn't it occur to her that we needed to work in this space? Of course not. I know the answer. It's a rhetorical question. I felt like I would be absolutely devastated and disgusted if I dropped anything in that particular area. Then again, there is no such thing as a clean space in common areas that are within subway and railroad platforms. I've learned in my life that there are so many people that walk the earth who are just so horribly selfish. Using drugs is just an avenue to serve as an excuse to behave poorly in a public setting, as far as I'm concerned. My foreman walked past her midstream and also shook his head in disgust. In this moment, the only thing you can possibly do is laugh amongst my coworkers. Just when you think that this is not what a lady should do, someone else raises the bar. After a weekend, my crew came back in on a Monday to discover that someone chose to defecate and leave their mess right in front of our gang box. I don't know, these people must have an axe to grind with us. That's what it felt after a while. Ugh. It looked like the biggest, most perfect snake coiled up perfectly like a chocolate cinnamon bun. I'm just glad that my foreman didn't ask me to clean up the mess. I honestly don't know how I would have tackled that mess. It is one thing to do that in the corner away from general population. It's another thing to do it right where the crew is working. It's like, come on, really, bro? Seeing homeless drunks who urinate on themselves and smell horrible is more of a thing on the subway versus the railroad platforms in the suburbs. The most interesting things happen within the New York City subway system since it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You always have to keep your eyes peeled as a passenger and as a worker for those folks who are looking to push another person onto the tracks. I have observed different groups of people who dance and do acrobatics while in one of the subway cars, one of which, the one that I see the most action, is in the A-Train subway car. I admit that they're very talented. They then walk around the car and try to collect donations from passengers. I remember one year dancing at a pop-up nightclub in the 14th Street subway station on New Year's Eve. It was so random, and it was after the ball dropped, and it just happened to be at the right place at the right time, so I got in on it for a little bit, so it was a good time. The beauty of the Metropolitan Transit System is that you can get away with navigating throughout the city without even needing a car. As a person who commuted both within the suburbs and into different boroughs of New York City, I appreciate the option of being able to take mass transit. The mass transit journey sometimes can take longer to commute versus driving. However, you reduce wear and tear in your vehicle significantly, plus you get to dodge sitting in congestion on the highway. When you avoid sitting in traffic, you also get to avoid road rage. I'm happy to be a part of working on upgrading our infrastructure. It's a pretty cool thing to hang your hat on. Working on the railroad is the hardest work that I believe that you can perform as an electrician. Bending, cutting, and threading rigid conduit requires some elbow grease and precision. Once you get your rhythm down pretty pat, then you move a lot faster. I've worked many times on the underside of the platform in the gravel while installing stainless steel threaded rod and strut for racks to support the conduit, and always messed up my neck while being forced to work for prolonged periods of time under shallow platforms. The coldest experience is being in the gravel and less than 10 feet away from the Hudson River around the month of February. I think between the months of January to March are the most brutal to have to spend outside, but we get through it like with anything. By the time it is quitting time, you want to fall asleep in your car the minute you warm up with the car heater. Thankfully, I do have the personality where I try to make even the worst jobs fun. I've danced and sang quite a few times while wearing rain gear and rubber boots in a muddy trench with my partner while working on either 4-inch PVC or rigid conduit. The objective was to get my miserable ass partner to laugh, which has worked out quite successfully many times. No matter the weather outside, did I mention that bucket truck is my absolute favorite work? I'm joking, of course. I'm not joking, but I'm stressing it. For me, it feels like a fun adventure. I have even had a group of older ladies gather around under my bucket and point up to me in the air. That was highly amusing. People act like a woman's hands and mind are incapable of doing this kind of work. When you're smart and you're strong, you could do any damn thing. That's what my dad always used to tell me. That's why when I was 14 years old, I started moving tractor trailers into the bay for service, 18-wheelers. My dad always used to tell me that when you're smart and you're strong, you could do anything. And then I believed it, so then I just followed suit. It wasn't until years later I got in the union that people started questioning, why are you here, kind of nonsense. I'm like, my dad said I could be here and do whatever the hell I want, so here I am. My abilities weren't questioned when I won the Iron Woman competition in boot camp. My abilities were not questioned when I completed my pole top rescue with a 45-foot pole and a 200-pound dummy, and I did that in under 4 minutes. For some reason, some civilian has something to say. I'm glad that I've allowed that to roll right off my back. When you have no fear, you're stubborn, and refuse to give up, you can keep going too and ignore the haters. Being stubborn pays off, I tell you that, because it causes you to refuse to quit, whether you're good at some shit or not. I have learned how to create tunnel vision when I'm working and block out the distractions, because everybody and their brother wants to know your business. They're always staring at you, scrutinizing you. It is vital to have tunnel vision so that I do not lose my focus and get myself hurt in an accident. I look forward to the day that is not a big deal to see a woman working in the same capacity that I have worked in for over 27 years now. Remember to not stare at a woman the next time you see her in passing on a construction project, because chances are pretty damn high that everyone on the project knows exactly what she's working on. She is being heavily scrutinized sometimes, and that can make it hard to focus. Just be sure to look quickly, root for her in your head, and keep walking. We thank you for your well wishes more than you realize. This podcast episode was my swift brush with my time that I worked with the tools on the railroad. Therefore, this wraps up this episode. If you have any questions or you want to check out further content, head over to my blog at www.constructiontales.com. I thank you for listening, and I wish you a great day. Peace out, Cub Scout. This wraps up another episode on the Verbally Disastrous podcast that can be found on over 20 podcast platforms, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Pandora Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. For more information, head over to our website at www.constructiontales.com. I thank you for listening and have a great day. This podcast is protected through the U.S. Copyright Office as well as the Writers Guild of America.